So corrections and then judiciary did get a little bump up as well because we have to keep the courts moving through here. We have the same problem in everything that we have, ladies and gentlemen. Teachers, police department, corrections department, is the fact that we are not generating enough money to pay people a fair amount of price that they really deserve in here. And we can certainly have a debate about how the money is applied and how it's used, especially, in my opinion, in PED and probably secondary education as well. But with that said, we're just not generating enough money right now. We have had 3 years of good growth, and we were trying to come back up to the levels that were cut back in 08 or 09, if I remember correctly. We're working our way that, and then of course this year the bottom fell out because of oil and gas, and so we're trying not to take a step back, but at least keep us even for a year and see where we are at that point in time. I don't want to be the guy who's preaching doom and gloom, and you know we're all going to be in trouble, but I think you guys deserve to hear the truth, and that's what we're telling you is the truth, that the state has an income problem right now. No one wants to raise taxes, but we're going to have to do something dramatic. We're either going to have to raise some taxes, we're going to have to, and I'm a Republican, and I'm, believe me, taxes is the last thing I want to deal with. We're going to have to adjust the tax code. We're going to have to look at other economic development so that we have some additional income coming into the state that buffers us from this up and down from the oil and gas industry. Or we're going to have to look at other options. And that may be, like I say, a tax increase. I don't want to do that. But we have to have money to make the state operate as well. So you understand a little bit of the tough decisions that we're getting into that we have to deal with. Man, I can go on. There was so much more, and I don't want to bore you to death. But the reality is we just need to figure out better ways to not only use the money that we're using right now, but to increase our incomes within the state over and above oil and gas. Aaron?
Bill, what's the story on 16?
In a nutshell, it got stuck in the Corporation Transportation Committee because there's no money to deal with it, and either side of the House could not justify giving a first year out $4.6 million tax break when we're in dire straits financially. It would not play well for veterans. It would not play well for legislators who were going to go through an election cycle, so on and so forth. But quite frankly, they just pocketed it. I will tell you that there's not anyone that I know of. And by the way, SB 16 is a elimination, a 4-year phase-in of elimination of state income tax on military retirement pay. Every other Western state and most states in the nation have some kind of break on that. And again, here's another list that we're behind the curve on. So we did a few good things for veterans in this, but the main thing was this bill, and we just were in a financial bind right now, and that's why it didn't move any farther than it did. I don't know of anyone, 112 legislators, I don't know of anyone who's opposed to doing this. The timing has to be right on it. So I guarantee you I will work my rear end off to make sure it's at the top of the pile next year. It was the first message that the governor gave in the Senate this year. Number one was this bill. So, but that's where it stuck. It stuck in there, and there were about five bills. We beat up on. We had veterans coming up there beating on John Arthur Smith. We didn't need to be beat up on. The guys in the House, and we just couldn't move the bill. And so that's where it stood. But we will do it again. We will get that bill done. I promise you that.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah. Ron? Thank you.
Well, you guys, since Yvette and Bill have probably told you everything. especially since Yvette spoke first.
Hey,
I'm not saying that.
Look, we went from Sunny and Cher to Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Did anything happen in the House?
Oh.
No, I'm sorry.
Where the work gets done?
Bill had the unenviable task of sitting on finance this year, although I think finance met three or four times all session. But
we had no money. There was no reason to meet, hardly.
I sit on public affairs and judiciary. So what we get is we got the crime bills, we got the interpersonal bills, we got all the stuff that you really don't enjoy talking about usually. The bill that was heard last night on the Senate floor, which was the child pornography bill, that was in public affairs and it was in judiciary. And the challenge that there was with that particular bill was trying to make sure that the issue of sexting, which I think everybody's probably heard about, where you know you take a picture and you send it, we're trying to be sure that kids, because they did that, taking the picture is one thing. Distributing it is something else. What that does is that brands them a sex offender, and is a as goofy or as bad or as wrong as what they're doing is. What that does to their life is tragic, because they're just they're kids in a lot of ways. They're making bad choices, and that bad choice is a really bad choice. So the discussion about the bill involved the Attorney General. We had in judiciary one night, we had about six or eight lawyers are all arguing about what it ought to be, including the sponsor of the bill, including all the lawyers on judiciary, and there's five or six of them. And they send some folks out, they work on it, they bring it back, and we've got an amendment, and I'm one of the only non-lawyers on the committee, and I ask them about one point in the amendment. There wasn't a lawyer in the room that could answer the question. So it shows you how difficult the issue was for them to deal with. And ultimately the bill, when it got to the Senate floor, got passed. There was an amendment, a last-minute amendment proposed that was, the trouble with it is here you get an amendment. This amendment came from the administration, came out the last possible minute, and how can you really have time to evaluate the amendment and make the right choice? So ultimately, we did not adopt the amendment. The bill did pass. The bill is better than what we have today. And the hope is that the attorneys will be able to come up with even better language to both create a penalty, but also to protect foolishness. And so they'll work on that and they'll go from there. I had a couple of bills that actually passed this year, which is not necessarily normal for me, because I try not to carry bills that don't have a fairly substantial impact. And so I've been unfortunate. I've worked for a couple of years with PED, the Public Education Department, to carry a bill for adjunct teachers. And what that would particularly do, and I see Richard down here, I've known for a long time, and he's an accountant, or was an accountant, and this bill would allow Richard to come into the school and teach math. If he could pass the test that would allow him to do that, he could come in and fill a spot. Well, the NEA, the other teachers' unions, they opposed the bill, because they're concerned that's going to take away jobs from qualified teachers. And the answer to that, or my answer to that, is that's not what it's intended to do. What it's intended to do is fill gaps in the number of teachers we have or don't have. We have numerous vacancies statewide in STEM, And we have other vacancies in other parts. So if an individual could step in and do this part-time, it seems reasonable to me. But it, at some point, maybe we'll be able to work closer with them and come up with an approach that does work. But right now, that bill has died 3 years in a row. I've carried it the last two. Phil Griego carried it the first year. So that's what's happened to that particular bill. The other bigger bill that I had this year was dealing with geothermal resources, and surprising enough, I spent most of my career in oil and gas development, and now I'm an environmentalist because I passed that particular bill.
So I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
Bill voted for it. I don't know.
So did I.
Yvette, I think, did too. But you know, so those are some of those things. But let's talk about for a second. And if I'm talking about something you guys already mentioned, let me know. But let's talk about the capital dollars that we, working together, were able to bring back to Alamogordo, because it's a process that a lot of people don't get. They don't understand it very well. Every year, if there's revenues available from what's called it's a junior severance tax bond is what it is, a supplemental bond. This year there was a certain amount of dollars in it. Bill and I each had about $960,000 that we could allocate to projects, and Yvette would have had a little less. Yeah, and it's just based on the House gets a certain amount of dollars, the Senate gets the same amount. When you divide it out among the 42 senators, well, we get a little more than the 70 House members. So we get the opportunity to listen to you before we go up there, talk about the projects that, for instance, the city needs. City of Alamogordo has projects on what they call their ICIP. County has the same approach. And they say, this is what we need help with. And they try to rank them. Well, Bill and I mean, I'll use me first. I've got Alamogordo, Cloudcroft, Carlsbad, Weed, Pinon, Chaparral, Otero County. Bill's got part of Roswell. Bill's got Ruidoso. Bill's got La Luz, Tularosa.
So there's also.
Yeah, there's these needs, and Yvette helps us pick up a little bit. She's got mainly Alamogordo, but she's able to help a little bit in areas like Timberon. You know, because Timberon, those smaller places, they have so little tax base that it's really difficult for them to acquire sometimes some of the stuff that they need. We were able to get for instance, a dump truck for Timberon. It's a $100,000 dump truck. Got a dump truck over in Carlsbad, and it was only $75,000, but obviously the silly things aren't cheap. But now we were able to do some things to help in Chaparral and to help here in Alamogordo, because we'd allocated some money in the past to some projects that ultimately have been either delayed or they decided they really couldn't do them right yet. So we moved some money, which this time we moved some money to the city of Alamogordo, which will help with the detention basin up on this side of town.
I'm trying to think of the name of that. What is it called?
It's a detention basin. Yeah. It's not a retention basin, it's a detention basin, and there's reasons for that too. But anyway, it detains water, it doesn't retain water, if that makes sense. But anyway, that thing, the city asked for about $1 million nearly on that, 900 and some odd thousand dollars. Okay, I've got 900 and some odd thousand dollars. It's pretty hard for me to take every nickel and go to one project. Deb put money in, Bill put money in, we sat there and we reallocated some money from, I believe that was the slash pit that we used there. So we're going to provide nearly all the money the city needs to do that. Have other things that we worked on like that where we were able to reallocate and help with a county project down in Chaparral. But that's what we have to do, try to work together to help out. Because if we didn't, we don't have much that we can really do. When people believe that, okay, you can ask your legislators for millions of dollars in capital outlay, process just doesn't work like that. We just never have that sort of money. There's other approaches you can take, but for capital outlay, it doesn't work that way. So when the city looks at projects, when the county looks at projects, people need to look at projects that are around $200,000, $300,000 that then we can really help fund and fix. But the bigger they are, it becomes just next to, you know, to impossible to do that. And it has to be done, has to be funded in other ways. That's why if any of you have ever read the city's ICIP, it will talk about grant funds, it will talk about local funds, and it'll talk about capital outlay type dollars. So city, when they're looking at it, they know on who they're going to go try to ask for money. But we won't have that much next year, because that's funded by an oil and gas revenue bond. So we're not going to be able to do that much next year. This particular budget that Bill was talking to you about, the trouble they had, I don't see that going away. I hope it does. But what Bill talked about was some sort of event in the Middle East. Well, that's the only way that there's going to be some sort of sudden spike in the price of oil. So what we may have is we may be sitting now with price oil in the $20 to $30 to $40 barrel range. And if that's what it is, if that's what it is for the next who knows how long, we are going to have real issues going forward. New Mexico for years, and it's not necessarily legislators or people or government's fault. Some of it is. But let's talk about the coal industry in New Mexico that's not here anymore. Because coal's dirty, or we can't use it effectively. So the town of Raton, which used to be a town of about 14, 15,000 people, is a town of about 6,000 people, half of which are on assistance. Because what drove Raton doesn't drive it anymore. The uranium industry over by Grants, it's no longer there anymore. Now it's there. There had issues with that because of some accidents and stuff they had. They didn't understand how to deal with that stuff, and so it made people ill. But we don't do that anymore. The country of Kazakhstan is now the fourth largest producer of uranium in the world. They pretty much took New Mexico's place. We don't do it anymore. So we lost that. We lost coal. We have people that would like to do away with oil and gas and replace it with solar or green energies that they think will be better. You know, everybody needs to be for that, but you need to recognize what it does. The jobs in the oil and gas industry pay lots of money, employ lots of people. When a solar farm's up and going, well, doesn't employ too many people because it doesn't need to. It needs people when they build it. It needs people right now that install solar, for instance, on your rooftop or whatever. But it can't replace what oil and gas does. So what are we going to do in New Mexico? What are we all going to be willing to do? Well, as Bill said, we need to change the tax code. But I don't know what that will do if you come in there and you reduce or you change it to, there's a proposal for a 2%, it's a flat tax. 2% on everything, walks, talks, moves, jumps, whatever it might be. It's also a 2% tax on your income. So it's an income tax as well. But that may be a good thing. Maybe there are other approaches. But where we're going is we don't have the extractive industries that we rely on, the federal jobs that we relied on, especially up in Albuquerque with Sandia Labs and with Los Alamos. Those jobs have cut back, so we don't have those anymore. Alamogordo has been really fortunate, even though sometimes we kind of don't think so. But our economy kind of runs like this, because as long as Holloman stays there, we're pretty stable. If Holloman left, like Walker did over at Roswell, it'd be horrible. But there's an opportunity, I believe, for this part of the world to grow and do better. But that's just this part of New Mexico. How do we help Clayton? How do we help Raton? How do we help Gallup and Grants? How do we help Espanola and Carlsbad? And how do we help Deming and Lordsburg and Las Cruces? How do we do that? And the only thing that we can do it with is tax policy to make it better. But there's an issue, and I just want you guys to be aware of what it's going to be, and it's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger, because it could have an immediate impact on the economy of New Mexico. That is the decriminalization or the legalization of marijuana. That's the only issue on the horizon that I see that could have an immediate impact. So it's going to continue to be pushed. We saw it this year, we'll see it again next year, and we're going to see it until something happens. You know, if marijuana is going to be legalized, it'd sure be handy if the federal government did what they needed to do to make that the case, instead of each state doing it. But I don't know whether that's the answer. I'm not going to tell you that it is. But I'm going to tell you it's an immediate impact thing that doesn't raise taxes on anybody. But all of this stuff, we need to step back. We really do. We're at a time that's almost unprecedented in our state. And we're going to have to look at all these options, whether that one you consider it or not, but you're going to have to look at it, because our revenue is not going to grow. So unless we're able to say that our costs are going to go way down some way, and you know, there's a constituency out there for every single thing you have. There's, you know, when I would invite you sometimes to come sit in to a public affairs committee meeting and listen to the advocates talk about the issues that they embrace and they love. There's a difference between an advocate and a lobbyist, for instance. You know who they are when you see them, but the advocates are, you know, they're going to push their issue come hell or high water, whatever it means, whatever happens, whichever it's going to be. It's up to us to decide. They're going to push it.
I was smiling because just really quick. We were not successful in getting the late-term abortion bills done. I carried one last year. We got it through the House, and it stalled this year in the Senate. It started, and I'm smiling because this isn't funny, but it kind of is when he said that. The advocates are serious, and I kind of have to appreciate their ability to come to the Capitol, fight that parking, that crowd. But this woman, and I'm telling you, she was like 75 or 80, and she came into my office, and she was just proud with her shirt that said, "My abortion was legal," and and something else. And I just looked at her, and I just couldn't help it. I went, that's just not working for you. You can't wear that around the Capitol. I said, that doesn't work for the cause. I'm just going to, did you look at that in the mirror before you left? Because I just had to be honest and tell her, like, we can be on the opposite side of this, but you sporting that shirt is not helping them at all, because that does not go, that does not even compute. You can't count. That doesn't count. But I mean, we can go on and on, because we didn't really get to go and peel back really the onion skin of all. There's so much more than what we just touched base on. I know we're getting short on time, but I really
some questions.
Okay, really quick, I want Colt to know, and I'm sure some of y'all have been watching that stuff on Facebook, because this is where I thought Colt was going a minute ago, with the public lands and the open season. Are you watching that stuff, Colt? So I want everybody to know that we're watching that also. Now, I do know of some horses in Socorro County. You saw that. Speaker Tripp is from Socorro County, so we're monitoring that. And a couple of cattle were shot down in Chavez County. So what it is there's just this craziness, and I don't know. We can't tell if it's a joke, somebody's just, if it's serious, but things are starting to happen where people are saying, hey, it's okay to kill livestock on public lands. So after the session, we've agreed, Speaker Tripp once involved in this, Mary Kay Papin's Pro Tem Papin once involved, and the cattle growers. We want just the leadership of these different groups to come together so they know we're watching it, we're monitoring that. We've got Steve Pierce's office involved. I've talked with Benny House. I mean, we don't want people to think in the rural areas that we're not taking that serious. And I'm not saying there's some cause for alarm. I'm saying, though, we need to be mindful of what's going on. So, Nicole, I'll get with you guys later, because I've talked to Jose and some of those guys, and these guys are aware of it too. So we're watching that, very, very seriously watching it.
I just want to clarify a couple of things, and I apologize because I'm really tired. the main thing is the driver's license. I want to add a little clarity to the driver's license. It's basically four levels, okay? Well, there's two levels and there's two levels and two parts to each level. So you can get a real ID compliant driver's license. Everybody will have that opportunity. You're gonna have to bring some your passport, your birth certificate, to MVD and get a real ID driver's license. Once again, confirming that you are a citizen, you were born here, and so on and so forth. Or you can be a citizen and opt out of that real ID if you don't want to bring in a whole bunch of stuff and turn in your driver's license and show that you actually were born here, so on and so forth, and you can get a non-real ID driver's license. Then we go down to the DAC, and I can't remember the acronym of this. Driving authorization card. Which goes out of the permit, which was a big debate anyway. I won't even go there. But this gives people who are here illegally the opportunity to just drive their car so that they can go to a grocery store, go to a doctor's appointment, get their kids to school, so on and so forth. It has to be renewed every 2 years. And then there is the final one. Anyone new coming into the state of New Mexico who wants to get one of these has to bring information about where they were born, who they are, and they get fingerprinted first time around. And those fingerprints will stay on file, and they are used to vet the people coming into the state of New Mexico. So while there was a lot of discussion about what we name these things, I tell you, typical politics, you get down to the point where the administration was not going to give anything that wasn't a permit. If the legislature were to pass something that said it's got to be driver's license or not, the governor probably would have vetoed it. The other side said that they will not do anything that has a permit on it, and it has to be a driver's license. So let me tell you, Paul Pacheco, who's a retired police officer, and Andy Nunez, who's been in the legislature for a long time, worked very hard for a year to put this thing together. And as it came out of the House, and again, the House did a great job with this, we sensed there was going to be a slowdown in this. Stuart Engel, who is the minority leader, the Republican leader on the Senate side, John Arthur Smith, the finance guy, got together, and they took the framework of this bill and really worked it, and they worked the governor on it, they worked the legislature on it, they worked the Senate Democratic side, they worked the House Democratic side, and we finally came up with this compromise bill that allows us to finally get over the real ID issue that we have, so everybody can have a real ID driver's license, get on planes, get on military bases, go to the labs, whatever you need to do, or you can opt out of that. So it's about choices, and you get a choice of what kind of driver's license you want. This satisfies everybody across the board, and there were some compromises because it is, in fact, not a driver's license. It actually is a
driving, whatever.
And so... This is what you have to do. This is what you do. And this can only be done by people with level heads who don't get emotional, get involved in this thing, and sit down across the table and talk. And that's how we get things done in the New Mexico legislature. When you have people who get emotional about their issues and so on and so forth, it detracts from the debate of the issue, and it becomes political, and then you debate the politics of the issue and not the issue itself. So... we have some really good, solid heads in the legislature, and quite frankly, these folks are just rock solid when we're discussing anything, especially as a chairman. You just need to see this work. And Ron's absolutely right. You need to come to public affairs or judiciary and listen to the debate from liberals and people in the northern part of the state or in the metro parts of the state, and listen to this conviction they have, how they feel, because just as passionate as we are, say, about Second Amendment rights and anti-abortion and so on and so forth, these people are just, if not more so, passionate about the other side of the fence. And you need to listen to these arguments to understand where they're coming from so you can combat them. And that's what we have to do on a daily basis up there. So it's an absolutely incredible experience. I think we all ask ourselves every day, why are we doing this? And we turn right back around and say, I am so thankful I'm doing this. Because not only do we try and pass good legislation, we have to protect the state against bad legislation. Yeah. And that goes back to the child pornography issue, that we were trying to protect kids from being labeled a sex offender for the rest of their life when they did something stupid. But I can tell you, I'm in a chat group on Facebook from previous radio stations I worked for, and these guys are always sending nonsense back and forth. We keep up with music, we keep up with other things, but one of them sent out the other day how we used to discipline kids, and it shows a dad with his hand up like this and a child across his lap with his pants down. He's ready to spank him, and this is how we do it today, and there's a slash in the thing, and it's a mom taking away the cell phone from the daughter. Because that's how you discipline kids today. So the point being, though, if I have, the way this bill was originally written, if I had that on my iPad, my computer, or my phone that showed that young man with his pants down and his dad by his side, although it's a 1940s or 50s photo, I could be charged with pedophilia or as a sex offender because I have it on my phone. That's what we have to do. I mean, that's how down in the weeds we all have to get when we bring this legislation to the table to make sure that our kids are protected, number one, that we're protected, and we don't pass bad legislation that just gives free rein to doing stupid things in this state. And I get a little wound up about that one because people don't understand oftentimes what we really have to deal with. The last thing I'll tell you is something that I've said for the 6 years I've been in the legislature is there is a dramatic, severe difference in attitude, character, and the character of anyone who lives in the urban areas of New Mexico and rural New Mexico. And we saw about three or four bills, again, Peter Wirth, who was an attorney in Santa Fe, brought things that came out of the commission or the city of Santa Fe that was debated heavily on the floor of the Senate to pass a bill concerning whatever, you know, someone in Santa Fe wanted to do, and it does not fit with the rest of New Mexico. So what we have to do is continue to ask for this to be an option. It has to be a local option. And this is something that we're all going to get a little bit more involved with over the next few years, is making sure when bad issues like that really just impact more of a liberal community, say Santa Fe or Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, those places, even Doniana now, that doesn't impact us. We have to be protective of that. So we're going to have to work very hard to make sure that is done on several issues that come up before us. So I'll shut up because I know you guys want to ask questions. But I think it's very important that you guys understand some of the battles that we have to deal with.
Did you tell them about the constitutional amendment?
Yeah.
You did?
I did. Okay. The resolution?
I'm so used to these guys.
Questions.
The bill that got hung up relative to the government ethics committee commission, the independent commission, got hung up. I believe it was in the Senate Rules Committee. Can you expound on that a little bit? Are there so many senators who are concerned about the things that they've done that they don't want to be investigated?
I don't mean to laugh.
Is this Jim Dine's House bill? It started in the House?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, I did not vote for it. And I will tell you, probably eight. I'm just going to, we're all friends here. I'm just going to be honest. I did not vote for that bill. The intent of what Representative Dine's wants to do is great. But we already have this stuff in place. And this bill actually set up more of the same people. It set up a commission made of legislators appointed by the governor, appointed by leadership. But that's not what we need. There was a second one that was introduced that was really kind of the backstop of after. We had a Secretary of State that had some trouble, went to jail. This bill wasn't in place. I mean, we have things out there. And we have whistleblower bills in place. We have ethics commission things in place. We have stuff in place right now. I didn't support it because for me, and I think some, I don't know how you guys felt, but other senators said it was just another layer of government.
I think
it wasn't a smart bill. And so I can tell you about 9 of us in the House Republicans caucus did not vote for it. And we hadn't discussed it. We just knew what it was inside.
So sometimes... Can legislators, I'm going to try and be politically correct here.
No.
Sometimes legislators,
you're my friend.
Okay, we're all in friends. Sometimes legislators want to make a name for themselves. We're going into an election cycle. They want to look like they're tough on this, tough on that. So they run this legislation, not even exploring the fact that most of the stuff is on the books already. The issue that we have a lot of times is the laws on the books are not always enforced. And I don't know how we get to that point. The judiciary is, off the record. The judiciary sometimes is more interested in changing laws or I don't want to say creating laws, but adjusting laws to benefit an issue rather than just going out and prosecuting people who are doing things. We DWI is such a huge problem in this state, and people keep arguing out of those things. And this has nothing to do with Gene, Rocky. So I'm just saying that. Oh, now I got her attention.
Yeah, she woke up.
I'm really concerned now because she's already texting. You know what Bill Burt said?
We did pass another DWI bill last night.
Yeah.
Why are you telling me?
Because he pointed at you.
But these guys, I mean, they're a second, third, and fourth. DWI offenders, they get in jail and they hear stuff going on, so when they go up to the judge or when they're going to have a case or something like that, they talk to their attorney and says, hey, I know who raped that girl, I know who stole that whatever from whatever or attempt murder or something like that, and they plea bargain out to where now you got a guy who's had 4 DWI arrests and maybe only 1 conviction, and he's out driving and partying and doing this stuff.
Cops.
So, it's tough. I mean, you have to make some value judgments. You want to use a little common sense of this thing. But DWI just needs to be enforced a whole lot more, in my opinion. We just have somebody, they're going to get killed or they're going to kill somebody.
Okay, Mr. Boss had a question.
This is a little off the subject, but all 3 of you are together, and this is something that concerned a lot of people, I think, in Alamogordo. Has there been discussion regarding the Germans leaving in 2019? Any discussion in the legislature?
Can you repeat the question? We can't hear anything.
He wants to know if there's been any discussion about the Germans leaving Alamogordo in the next year or two. Or
that, in 2019.
I'm sorry, 2019.
Yeah. That issue is a federal issue. It has nothing to do with the state. It's a state department and higher, quite government-to-government issue. two things you can look at. And the Germans are notorious negotiators. So if the rumors are out there, so on and so forth, that's a good bargaining chip for them. You know, what I will tell you is that the Germans have invested between $150 and $200 million in this base. And some more downtown. We have a school, we have their church and their gathering place. They pay all their bills out there. They know what their bills are going to be. However, the government does charge them a fee. And I don't know what that fee is, quite frankly, but let's just arbitrary figure $120 million a year. So if they threaten to leave and that money just is basically rent to be out there, it would be of great benefit to the German government to say, hey, I negotiated $50 million off of that. So it's not 120 now. We're down to 80, $70 million. So the government can justify that. They can win and maintain the function out there. The government really doesn't lose that much. I mean, we lose $50 million, but what is that for? It supplements Department of Defense or the Air Force, or State Department. So there's a lot of negotiation that goes on like that. The other side of the deal is Germany is in trouble. I mean, I don't want to say in trouble, but they have problems. Right. Merkel can't keep her government together in many cases. They have real budget issues, and they have a lot of socialists who think that the defense of the nation is way down on the priority list because they want social issues addressed rather than defending the nation. Right now, they're not going to buy as many Eurofighters as they had predicted to do. We thought at one time we might have Eurofighters over here. The jury is still out until they actually buy them and manufacture them and get as many as they're going to have. But I will tell you that the Air Attaché for the German Air Force 3 years ago told a group of us that there is no bigger recruiting tool in all of the German Air Force than a potential three-year stint at Holloman Air Force Base in the United States of America. They can't do this mission. They still go low and slow, or low and fast in many cases. And they can't do that in very many places in the entire world, and they certainly can't do it in Germany right now. They lost the last bombing range 2 years ago. Darren, was that 2 or 3 years ago? They can't do this. Now, they can go to Poland or one of the stands or something like that, and once they get there, they're going to find out that what the agreement is and what they actually get is probably going to be two different things. So they can't rely on those countries to benefit them. Nowhere else in Europe to go, and you already have your investment here at Holloman Air Force Base. So there's two ways to look at this. Yeah, there is some issues that we need to work out. I can guarantee the State Department and Steve Pierce and people in our government are working on those issues right now. The other thing is it's a bargaining chip, and we're just going to have to see where that happy median is and maybe stay here. I can't give you an idea of, is it a 50-50 deal? I don't know. I couldn't say right now because I haven't been close enough to the negotiations and what they're saying. Now that I'm back in town, I probably will hear a little bit more about that issue. Mm-hmm. But critically important to the economy. I mean, there's about 500 German military spouses and dependents, 1,500 people in this town. We lose 1,500 people, you can imagine what kind of impact that would have. Okay. I guarantee you the government is working on that.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Very
next question. Anyone? Perfect. Yay. That, you know what? But I think we're supposed to do a roundtable sometime soon with the chamber.
Tuesday?
Yeah, next week. So I know this was such like a 30,000-foot view because there's so much more to get into. But we'll probably have a couple of meetings that we'll be at so we can get a little deeper into the weeds on some of the other things that happened. And I've got a book that has all the bills that were introduced and all the memorials, and it's packed in my car. I'd have brought it in, but anyway, thanks for having us.
Yes.
Gosh, yeah.
Tuesday the 23rd at the 19th hole at the golf course, presented by the chamber. It's open to everybody. I think we have 2 hours earmarked for something like that, and we won't be as brain dead. Hopefully then as we are tonight. So.
But, Tuesday the 23rd at what time?
8 or 8:30, 8 o'clock I believe.
Tuesday the 23rd at
8
o'clock
at
the 19th hole.
Anyway, thank you all.
8 a.m. Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you all. That driver's license bill thing, I mean, I don't get it, because what part of illegal do we not get? I just don't understand that. Illegal is illegal.
No. You should be.
Okay. All right. Next year I'll go up there.
Come to the meeting and listen to these arguments.
Come to a meeting and you're sitting in the House, in the capital of the state of Mexico, and there's 150 people in line going, I am an illegal. And they're saying it all in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Yo no hablo español. Mm-hmm. And they have to have somebody else repeat everything they're saying to you. And they are standing there right in front of you saying, I'm here illegally. I need this for my car. I need to drive my kids to school. And I need to go to my job.
Why isn't Darren up there with his handcuffs, everyone? Yeah,
absolutely.
Border Patrol.
But then you've got Mr. Obama.
The Mexico concealed carry license, real ID compliant.
There's multiple things that you, there will be information coming out. There's multiple things you can present to get that license.
You got concealed carry license. The big thing here is birth certificate, wasn't it?
That's the tip of the spear.
To carry a Second Amendment legal arm.
And just so you know, it's going to take a few years to get this. I mean, she's going to sign the bill. She might have already signed it, or she'll sign it in the next couple of days. And it's not actually going to go really into effect, because you've got several months here before the tax and rev, the DMV can even get ready with the paperwork and the new, how they're going to do it. So it'll really, what the idea is by 2019 or 2020, it'll be completely done. But it's going to be an incremental thing. But as we understand it, the extensions now with the federal government, because we passed this law and we had another bill heard also that kind of went hand in hand. It basically said, look, we're really doing what you said we needed to do. It was another bill altogether, separate, different. But they're supposedly now giving us those extensions now for the access until we get this completely implemented. And it'll take a couple of years before it's really all the way. I mean, if I'm here illegally and I have a license and it's good for another 2 years, I don't have to do anything until that license expires. On the other side of that, we do know who all those people are, because they are in a database. But still, they're not just going to go out and start profiling for people whose licenses haven't expired yet. So just know we did our job, but it is a bit of a, it's not an immediate fix. It's going to take a few years to be incrementally getting it all the way in. I'm sure that, I mean, that's,
there's no physical way we can go back. I mean, it's just, there's too many folks here. You can't go back. What we do is we drew the line in the sand, and we have to go forward from here. As the licenses, as they get stopped, they will be addressed. If they their license expires, they'll have to be addressed in that way. This has happened since the Richardson administration. I don't know how many, many years ago. And you just can't turn the switch and fix it all in one whack. We drew the line in the sand, and so going forward, over the course of time, we'll have to work all this stuff out. The thing that really bothers me, I need to shut up, but the thing that really bothers me...
You're tired, Bill.
People have come into... Yeah, I am. People have come into the state, they've gotten our license, and then they've taken that license down to New Jersey, to California, to Chicago. They've gotten a driver's license there somewhere along the line. They've gotten probably a fake Social Security number card. And now they've integrated in the fabric of America. We don't know who they are, where they are, what they're doing. And we're going to have another 9/11 so we're on, because somebody came through New Mexico and got one of those driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Bill's tired. You can screw it up in a day, but it takes 16 years to fix it. So that just never fails. But on a personal note, I just want to tell you, Bill and I kind of grew up together. Not really, but our kids did. I mean, so I, Bill and Yvette, I'm going to have to leave you out of this, Ron, because I haven't known you that long. But I heard you say that, Bill.
I'm sorry.
But I've seen Bill and Yvette grow, not this way or this way, but grow in their respective political careers. I mean, I can remember Yvette just first starting, and Bill, the first time he came to me and said, I want to do this. I tried to talk you out of it. You wouldn't listen to me. But I, from a personal point, I just want to say I just want to tell you thank you so much for your hard work and everything that you guys do. And I'll include you in this, Ron. Go ahead. For all your hard work that you do for us in this community. Without you guys doing what you do and standing up for our county and bringing what little money that you can bring back to us and being as accessible as you are to this community, you answer our calls, our emails, you are always there when we need you, and you are, you know, when I talk to other friends throughout the state, when I say I can literally pick up the phone and call my legislator, they're like, what, are you kidding? I don't even know who mine is. They don't return my calls. So we are fortunate, and we thank you, and we know how hard it is. So thank you so much for all you do. So, and thank you, candidates, for putting your toes on the line. Win, lose, or draw, we thank you for being there and for doing it. And win, lose, or draw, don't give up. Stay involved, because, gosh darn it, this is what we need. We got to move forward. We can't keep going back. There are days that I get up and think, hell with this crap. I'm going to go off the grid. I'm out of here. I'm tired of fighting the fight. But we can't give up. We can give up. We got to keep fighting. So next month, we are going to have our district attorneys who are going to run. Our current district attorney, David Ceballos, who I have not had confirmation from yet, but his opponent, John Sugg, who has confirmed our next meeting, March 17th. They will be here, hopefully. And that's it. So we will see you then. Thank you all for coming.
Let me make a little announcement.
And Yvette's going to say something, and so is Bill.
Yeah, well, the petitions, but did
okay,
you guys
petitions. Please sign the petitions before you leave.
If you live north of 10th Street, for me, if you live south of 10th Street, for Ron, and anywhere in town for Yvette.
Yvette, so.
Yeah. And I have them right here.
And also, before you leave, do one thing. Go out and do something nice for somebody, please.
Franklin.
Yeah, so just so you guys know, Franklin Graham is doing a 50-state tour, and he's going to stop in every single capital, and he's going to be in Santa Fe on March 16th, Wednesday the 16th. I'll post it on my Facebook page.
Oh, cool.